As she said, I'm Sujata Nayak. I have no relationships to disclose. And I wanted to tell you that I'm very happy to be able to speak with you today about this project, and I'm glad you stayed until the end of the session or came in late to be able to listen to this. We introduced the standard days method in Guatemala, and I'll explain in a few minutes what the standard days method is if you haven't heard about it. But after it was introduced, we had some concerns about sustained capacity of the providers. So we did this research to see which refresher method would increase both quality and not be of high cost. So as most of you probably already know, once you train a provider, their knowledge decays over time. And there are a number of strategies that have been used to prevent this decay. You probably know about these already: on-site supervision, group supervision meetings, refresher trainings. There was also a study that was done in Guatemala about a self-assessment checklist. This was a checklist that providers and supervisors could use to assess their quality, and it was based on the COPE strategy. So this study was done about the standard days method. It's a fertility awareness-based method of family planning. It identifies days 8 to 19 of the menstrual cycle as fertile. So, and it's appropriate for women with menstrual cycles that are between 26 and 32 days long. And it helps a couple avoid unplanned pregnancy by knowing which days are fertile and which are not. And it's also used with a visual tool that's pictured right here that's called cycle beads. We also devised what we call the knowledge improvement tool, and we usually call it by shorthand, so it's the KIT. And this tool we use to monitor and maintain provider knowledge. It's a guide that would lead the person who's implementing it to ask a list of questions, and the supervisor would reinforce the correct answers and address any knowledge gaps. There's a number of categories of questions: how to use cycle beads, who can use SDM, and when the woman could start using the method. The times that I've seen it implemented, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes, and it's only 2 pages long. To talk a little bit about our program in Guatemala, the SDM was integrated into the family planning program in 2002. Some of the partners included the Ministry of Health, the Guatemala Social Security Institute, and ProRedis, which was a USAID-funded network of NGOs. The ProRedis network, which is the network that we did this study with, was in several departments around the Guatemala City and Highlands. They had interventions in health, education, microcredit, and agriculture. Some of the family planning methods they offered were DEPO, IUDs, condoms, and pill. And they had a wide variety of providers, all the way from doctors and nurses to community health workers and traditional birth attendants. And they spoke a variety of languages: Spanish, Cachiquel, Quiche, and Mam. So the question that we were trying to answer with this study is, what is the effectiveness of the KIT compared to the other traditional forms of refresher training? There were 10 ProRedis NGO NGOs that were trained during a one-day workshop in 2004, and that accounted for 356 providers. 18 months later, before we were going to begin our study, we applied a questionnaire to assess the numbers of providers that were still with the NGOs and the number of providers that were actively providing the SDM. There was a couple of reasons that we did this questionnaire before we did the rest of the study. One of them is that the ProRedis network had lost their funding at the time, so we weren't sure how many of those NGOs were still working actively and how many of the providers had still stayed there. And also, just the environment there, there is some fluidity, and we thought some of the providers might have moved around some. In the end, we had, from our sample of providers that we're still actively offering, we excluded doctors because we wanted the groups to be kind of even, and we didn't we didn't think that the community health workers and traditional birth attendants would be comfortable with the doctors present. So we had a sample of 80 people, and they were administered four levels of refresher training or support. The first one was the kit, which was applied on an individual basis. So the supervisor would go to the clinic, to each clinic, and implement it with the provider. The next level was kit applied in a group setting. So all of the, a certain number of providers would be called together in one location, and the kit would be applied. Another group was a traditional two-hour refresher training, and the last group is no refresher training or support. After the intervention, 3 months afterwards, we applied pseudo-simulated clients. These are observed counseling sessions during which a trained woman plays the role of a client for whom SDM is appropriate. This is a pseudo-simulated client and not a regular simulated client or a mystery client, because the providers were actually aware that it was a trained woman playing a role. And a trained observer uses a checklist to see what elements were covered or not covered. This included sections on need assessment, contraindications, user instructions, follow-up, and the use of tools or support materials. We also collected some cost data. This included the time required for the training or the use of the kit, material costs, and additional costs such as transportation and venue. So after we used our first questionnaire, we saw that there were 4 NGOs that were continuing to offer the SDM. And we saw that if you look at the first column of this table, those are some of the NGOs in the ProRedis network. And we saw that most of the providers were CBDs or midwives. And this shows how the providers were distributed between each of our intervention groups. So you can see that it's pretty evenly distributed. So when we look at the results, you'll know that the groups are pretty comparable. With the pseudo-simulated client results, there were some problems that we saw throughout each of the intervention groups. This had to do with partner issues, counseling, and the use of tools or support materials. For example, the providers did not offer to talk to partners, did not offer to explain how to use a condom, give the client condoms, or refer to the job aids, or use other tools. This is the scores on the different sections of the pseudo-simulated client. So if you go down the first column, those are the subsections that I had mentioned earlier. If you go to the very last column, the no refresher group, you can see that their scores were significantly lower in each of the different sub areas. And then if you look at the individual kit score for user instructions, you can see that that score is significantly higher than all of the other intervention groups. So we found it interesting that even though we had a fairly small sample size, we still had significant results that strongly suggest that some type of refresher training is needed. And individual kit would be the best due to the significant difference in the user instruction subscore. This is our cost data. So if you go to look at the very last column, that's the cost per provider for each of our intervention groups. So individual kit was the highest cost per provider. But we want to note that the kit was designed to be part of regular supervision visits. So if it had been a regular supervision visit, this would have been a lower cost. But due to the way our study was structured, the kit was applied individual, separate from supervision. So the cost is quite high here. And then you can see that group kit and traditional refreshers, the cost are pretty on par with each other. And then no refresher, of course, doesn't cost anything. So what we saw that the individual kit is the optimum approach, but it requires greater resources, and the added benefit you get is quite limited. So the individual kit would be the most appropriate for programs that could integrate the kit into their routine supervisory visits. Other programs could consider either the group kit or the traditional refresher trainings. So more general conclusions are that refresher training is essential for the sustained capacity of SDM providers, and this is most likely true for all family planning methods. And programs have to consider what is most practical in terms of their existing systems and their budgets. And one question you might have is, well, what happened in Guatemala? So they decided, as they're moving forward, that they would do the traditional refresher training. Thank you very much, and I can take any questions you have. Yes, ma'am. I'm not very familiar of what's going on with Guatemala right now in our program there, but if you are interested, I can take your card and then have my colleagues respond to your question.
The program began with a training of 356 providers, mm-hmm. and 18 months later, there were only 80 providing SDMs. What happened in those 18 months? Was there a cut of funding? Why so many providers lost interest in SDMs? And also, the number of NGOs trained was 10, and only 4 were providing SDMs. What happened in those 18 months?
First of all, the 356 providers included doctors, and we had excluded the doctors from our sample. So it's everybody else that's the 80. And one thing that did happen is that ProRedis Network had lost their funding. So some of the NGOs were still operating, some not. And also there were some transportation issues. So because this was kind of spread out over the highlands, some of the NGOs, our implementing agency, wasn't able to get out to see them.
Any other questions? No? Well, thank you very much. Very good. Excellent. Good. So in summary, I think we've heard very nice 5 presentations. Dr. Lukman from Benin told us about the quality of care using quality improvement teams and obtaining very good results, except when there are no drugs, then that's a problem. You have quality when you don't have medicines. Then Dr. Hardy told us about the improvements of information and how to assess monitoring evaluation systems in order to actually see whether the quality of the data is something that will allow you to keep providing quality services. Dr. Edward told us about the usefulness of using research to identify the determinants of quality of care, and which it's also related to what Abigail was telling in Ghana, how difficult it is to enforce when you have too many standards. Maybe less is more, but how much less is what probably we need help with. And Sujata looked at the quality improvement of family planning programs, and I think it was interesting to see. I hadn't ever seen using the mystery clients for family planning programs in that context, so that was very interesting. I think it's a very useful and cost-effective way of looking at the quality of services. So I was wondering if you could share some of your experiences in improving quality assurance in your programs, and what do you think of the presentations you heard today? Yes, go ahead, Carrie.
I'll kind of follow up from what I was saying earlier.
Maybe there should be pocket size versions.
Or else, take a copy with them. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Probably not unique to Ghana.
Mm-hmm. Good. Very good. Yeah. Yes, Dr. Lubna.
Thank you. I think that there are in Africa countries who have some difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
How to integrate community information in our system, airport system is difficult because we have in our country some community health worker. He doesn't go to school, we don't write anything, and we have illiterate. How can we can do to catch some information in
and integrate it
in the health system? The second problem I want to share with you that when I see the presence of Ghana,
Guatemala, Afghanistan.
We have, I compare it from Benin information system.
Mm-hmm.
In Benin, we start to take place an information system by collecting data at the health center. The data is synthesis on collect data and this level.
Mm-hmm.
And we are integrating, we have an information system in this level. We are taking all that in there and send it on national level.
Mm-hmm.
This one is performed for us, you know. We can have it, we can have it, the information at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And we write a sentence for a report of all the, and by integrating all information become the over level.
Mm-hmm.
What our challenge is now, how to integrate community information.
That's related to
the
mm-hmm. Good. Would you like
session,
to?
For training session,
uh-huh.
I think that it's not good to be rich in a level session training.
Mm-hmm.
We want to combine, organize group sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And after 3 months or after 1 month, going to supervise.
We do the refresher.
After 1 month or 3 months,
Refresher training and supervision. Very good point. Maybe we can spend a few minutes, maybe some of the panelists want to respond to the issue of how you do quality assurance when you have illiterate community health workers. And maybe your example in Afghanistan with 17,000 community health workers, which many must be illiterate, is an interesting problem. And then how you start to integrate all the health systems and all the reporting. Maybe you'd like to say something?
I just want to respond to your question about how you integrate data from community systems into, and there are other tools that the Measure Evaluation Project is developing under PEPFAR. It's called the Clipper tool, and it's exactly that. How do you actually set up a community-based information health information system so that it links into the national program? The tools that I was talking about are, once you have that system, you can still trace the quality of the data. So I'd be happy to talk to you some more.
What's
after.
The name of the tool again?
It's the I think it's still called Clipper.
Clipper.
The community level program indicator program results. Yeah. So
we can Google Clipper and we'll find it.
Come talk to us. We'll
come talk to you. Okay.
I'll try and point you
get
in the right
Clipper.
Direction.
Yes, Sally. Excellent.
So in fact, the information from the Pictorial Register feeds directly into the National Health Management Information System. We had an advantage in Afghanistan because we were starting with nothing. And one of the things that I wanted to raise a question about, I think, with Karen, and I apologize because I came in a few minutes late, Karen, but one of my concerns, and I'm seeing this more and more with the imposition of PEPFAR requirements, is that we are
very expensive. It's expensive.
And I find that really a huge issue for us when we're talking about data.
But the issue of cost of monitoring and evaluation, I think that's a very good point. Anybody want to?
That's exactly why we put that as one of the components of the M&E system, whether it's linked to the national system, because we feel so strongly that they just have to be. You know, I think when PEPFAR was first set up, there were so many requirements for showing data right away that those parallel systems almost had to be set up immediately. But I think we're moving away from that system of having parallel M&E systems. So we actually couldn't agree with you more. On that. But, you know, my colleagues, if I can just say, my colleagues from the Global Fund, and I certainly don't speak for the Global Fund, say, you know what, we are giving countries millions of dollars in funds to do programs that governments and that the countries say, okay, in our Global Fund grant, these are the data that we say, the indicators we say we'll measure, and we're asking you for money to do the programs, and we'll give you these data. And so their perspective is, you know what, these countries, in their grants, need to set up strong M&E systems. And these are national systems. The Global Fund is not saying at all set up parallel systems. So they say, you know, the countries have some responsibility also, because there are Global Fund grants that have indicators that there are no systems to measure the indicators. So how they end up in a national program and then in a contract to say we will deliver these data when there's no system to deliver them. So that's what our tools are trying to help sort of flesh out and improve the systems.
Very good. I think the importance of having information systems and good monitoring, evaluation, and quality assurance is something very good that maybe we should discuss in next year's panel.
Yeah.
So maybe we should all come back next year and talk more about monitoring, evaluation, the cost, and more about community-based quality assurance. And I hope you come back, Dr. Lukman. You'll come back? Good. And you'll bring the integrated program. Good, good. Excellent. I want to thank all the presenters. Thank you very much for coming. And have a good lunch and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. You give me a lot to work with.